Ervin Daf Chav Zayin. We have the schus of starting the third parak of the Masechta. Gives us an opportunity to quickly recap the first two parakim. First parak was Tikkun Mavui. Mavui Sosam closed in by three walls, which is a Rishus Yachid, but in order to be able to carry within the Mavui Sosam, so it requires a Tikkun, it requires an adjustment. The first parak dedicated itself to the topic of how to be Masakein a Mavui. Second parak dealt with other types of Rishus HaYachid. First half of the second parak, Pasei Beiraus, those who are Ole L'Regel and need to stop along the way for Shabbos and are stopping by a well and want to make a makeshift Rishus HaYachid enclosure around the well. So it does so in the formation of brackets. It's Pasei Beiraus, the first half of the second parak. Second half of the second parak dealt with Karpov. You have an enclosure, it's Rishus HaYachid, nevertheless, if it's non-residential, if it is a karpov shelo hukaf l'dira, so one cannot carry in that area if that area exceeds 5,000 square amos. The Gemara spent four dapim discussing that topic in depth. As we now begin the third parak of Erevin, topic is going to move now to the main sugya, so to say, the main topic of the Masechta, and that's going to be the actual Erev itself. We're going to be discussing first Erev Tchumim. And so let's just go over a very brief and basic introduction in terms of Eruvei Tchumim. Shabbos, one is not only prohibited from carrying, but also one is prohibited from traveling a certain distance. From your Makom Shvisa, from your point of center, one can only carry, one can only walk 2,000 amas in each direction. This is not an issue of carrying. Carrying is Otzah, which we discussed extensively back in Masechta Shabbos, but over here we're discussing the amount of distance that a person can walk on Shabbos. And a person is confined within a certain area, 2,000 amas in every direction from his Makom Shvisa. Later, we're going to be discussing the fact that the 2,000 amas, if you are living in a city, does not start until you get to the city limits. We already kind of touched on that point in yesterday's daf on the top of Chavavim and Aleph, but it's something that we're going to be discussing in much greater detail later in the Masechta. In the meantime, however, for this Makom Shvisa, once is your point of center, so then you can only walk 2,000 amas in each direction. Let's say, for example, before Shabbos, you know you want to go 4,000 amas in a certain direction. So what you can do is that you can move your Makom Shvisa. You can only do this before Shabbos, where during the Bein Hashmashos period, on the onset of Shabbos, so you're going to be able to acquire a new Makom Shvisa. Now, it is a zero-sum game, meaning that you will not be gaining, really. All you're doing is just simply moving your point of center so that now, instead of being in the center of your 2,000 amas in each direction, you will now be on the extremity as you move your Makom Shvisa over, depending on wherever you wanted to move it to. All this will be discussed in much more detail. This is just simply a broad sketch of Eruvei Tchumim. How do you move your Makom Shvisa? So you can do so in one of two ways. The simplest way, or perhaps it's not simple, but the most straightforward way, is to just simply situate yourself in the place that you want to become the Makom Shvisa. So for example, if let's say you want your Makom Shvisa to be 2,000 amas to the east of where you are currently, so just before Shabbos, so simply move over 2,000 amas to the east and then spend the introduction of Shabbos in that new area. That's one way to acquire a new Makom Shvisa. But the other way, which is really what we're going to be discussing extensively in this parak, is that you're going to set up an Erev Tchum. And that means to say that you will set up some food in the location where it is going to be your new Makom Shvisa. That food will be there at the onset of Shabbos. If the food is there, you don't need to be there. And that's going to acquire for you your new Makom Shvisa. And this is described as Erev Tchum. The first thing we're going to be learning in the beginning of the third parak today is the idea that the food itself could be pretty much any food. It's a point that we're going to be learning over the course of today's daf. It's coming up momentarily. Once the food is there during the Bein HaShemashos period, so that now this becomes your new Makom Shvisa, assuming, of course, that you can walk there, you have the means of getting there on Shabbos itself, meaning it's within 2,000 amas of where you currently are. So this Makom Shvisa now will acquire for you your new central point. You walk to your Makom Shvisa, you walk from there, 2,000 amas, and you have now basically moved your Tchum area from where you currently are to a new point of center. With that stated, let's see the Mishnah inside. B'chom ha'rav m'mishtafim chutz min ha'mayin min ha'melech. So the Mishnah's first point is that you can make your Erev Tchum using anything. You could also make shituf mevos using anything. Anything over here means any food, with limited exception. And those exceptions are mayim and melech, salt and water, in correct order, water, and salt. These are the two foods that one cannot, presumably because even though water obviously is essential, but nevertheless it doesn't provide anything in terms of nourishment. It's non-caloric. I'm not sure if that's really the best way to say it, but still, the idea is that these are foods that are not nourishing, and so therefore they cannot be used for your Eruvei Tchumim. There is a Rashi here in the beginning of the parak. You see the Rashi inside. B'chumar Abin Rashi says Eruvei Chatzeros Utchumim. So Rashi says that we're talking about Eruvei Chatzeros as well. That's a very difficult Rashi, and Tosfos notes it. The first Tosfos in our parak, which points out that we're going to learn together later in the Masechta, but that for Eruvei Chatzeros, it needs to be bread. And the idea over here in our mission is that I could use any food. And on top of that, if you just take a look at this parak, which we're going to, Mirtz Hashem, going to go through together, so you see clearly that our parak here is talking about Eruvei Tchumim. So it is much more mistaken to say that our mission over here is talking about Eruvei Tchumim and not Eruvei Chatzeros. It's simply just a difficult Rashi. Anyway, the first halacha that we learned in our mission is that for Eruvei Tchumim, so it could be any food with exception to water and salt. And the same thing is true with Kesef Meiser. We've gone over this point numerous times. Let's review. On the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, your second Meiser, your first Meiser is going to the Levim. Your second Meiser is going to be collected and brought to Yerushalayim and eaten in Yerushalayim. Obviously, this is going to be a bit of a strange in that every time you go ahead and you harvest, you're now going to have to take your second Meiser and go up to Yerushalayim. You may not be proximate to Yerushalayim. So what do you do? So what you can do is take all the Meiser Sheni produce and transfer the Kedushas Meiser Sheni onto money. Then the Torah says you're going to take your money, bring it to Yerushalayim, to the area of Yerushalayim, and you can purchase with it Bechol Asher Taveh Nafshecha, anything you want, meaning any food that you want. The Torah actually goes through a list of foods that you can buy. We're going to go over this list a little bit later on in the daf. And then, once you buy the food, you're going to eat that food in Yerushalayim. So the Kedusha Meister Sheni starts with the produce on your field, goes to the money, and then when the food is purchased, the Kedusha Meister Sheni goes to the food that's purchased in Yerushalayim. So, which foods can you purchase with it? So you can purchase any food that you want. Which, quite frankly, if you think about it, is interesting in that the food that originally had the Kedushas Meiser Sheni was produce. And meanwhile, in terms of what you could buy with that food, you could buy anything which is food, anything which is edible. So the truth of the matter is that the Meiser Sheni starts as produce, but it could end off as something like meat or fish or cheese. What can't it be? So that's what our Mishnah is telling us. Our Mishnah says that what I cannot purchase with the Meiser Sheni money is neither water nor salt. Hanoda ben Amazon mutter b'mayim u'b'melach. A person makes a neder that he's not going to eat anything which is sustaining, anything which is nourishing, so he would be allowed to eat mayim u'melach, and certainly would give an indication that the reason why you cannot make an eruv tchum with these foods is because they're not nourishing. Otherwise, why would the Mishnah make this point over here? This is a point that really belongs in Masechta Nedarim. Anyway, ma'arvin l'nazir b'yayin uli Yisrael b'truma. The Mishnah then goes on to make a new point, which is a tremendous chiddush, a seemingly tremendous chiddush, and that is that if a Nazir wants to make an Erev Tchum and he could use any food, so he can make his Erev Tchum with wine. Now, obviously, that's a tremendous chiddush because the Nazir, obviously, is not allowed to drink wine. It would be an Isser Min HaTorah for him to drink wine. But since the wine is edible, drinkable by others, so therefore it does qualify as a food, and therefore the Erev Tchum would work even when made with wine, even by a Nazir. Similarly, the Yisrael who's not allowed to eat truma, but the truma is edible to Kohanim, the Yisrael can go ahead and make an Erev Tchum with truma as well. So this point of the Mishnah, both the Yain Legabe Nazir and the truma Legabe the Yisrael, these are tremendous chidushim. Simchus Omer B'chulin. Simchus is of the opinion that, no, you can only use chulin in order to make an Erev Tchum. Whether or not Simchus is arguing also by the Nazir and the Yain, so we're going to get to that. We're going to discuss that later on, not today. Well, the Kohen Bebeis HaPras, Rav Yehuda Amer, Afilu Bein HaKvaros, Mimishiachu Lachutz Velelech V'Lechol. As far as the Kohen is concerned, so he can put down his Erev Tchum in the Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras is an area that is a suffix. We are in doubt as to whether or not there is any remains in that area. There was a grave over there, was plowed through. And now, in that expanse of land, we are unsure as to whether or not there is any tumas over there, and so the Kohen Midrabanan cannot go into that entire area. It's a safek, and so but nevertheless, according to the Tanakama, you could put down the Erev Tchum in that area. The Gemara is going to discuss why that can be. And then Shitas Rav Yehuda, which is even a bigger chiddush, is that you can put the Erev Tchum even in a Beis HaKfaros, even if the Kohen is the one making the Erev Tchum. And the reason why is because at least it's halachically possible to go into a chest, into some sort of carriage, and be transported through the cemetery. This will be discussed in greater detail later on as well. In the meantime, however, we're going to start off with the beginning of our Mishnah and go back to the first point of the Mishnah, is that b'choma arvin, that when making Erev Tchum, you could use any food that you want, with notable exception to water and salt. And we start with the Gemara on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Am Rav Yochanan ein lamidim in haklalos ve'afilo b'makom she'nemar bo chutz. So Rav Yochanan has the following rule, and that is that every time that we find a klal, a general rule in the Mishnah, that does not mean that it's always going to be the case. Meaning a general rule is just that. It's a general rule. But it doesn't cover every exception. And Rav Yochanan says that I'll go even one step further. Even in a place where it says except, that still does not mean that anything that's not in the exception is going to be covered by the general rule. So Rav Yochanan says, look, general rules are just that. They're general rules. And there's always going to be exceptions or exclusions within the general rule. And even when the Mishnah goes out of its way to say, except for this, that doesn't mean it's the only exception. There could be other exceptions as well. And it's just speaking to the general rule. Now, the statement to Rabbi Yochanan, what Mishnah did he say it about? So it's interesting because the Gemara points out, so Rav Yochanan says, look, even when it says chutz, which means that Rav Yochanan was commenting on a Mishnah that happened not to say the word chutz. Now, our Mishnah does say the word chutz. So Rav Yochanan's point is relevant to our Mishnah, but he didn't say it about our Mishnah. The original statement to Rav Yochanan was said about another Mishnah. The Gemara wants to know, hecha kai. So on what Mishnah is Rav Yochanan making reference to? Hasam kai. It's going on the following Mishnah, the Mishnah in Kiddushin. The end of the first parak, towards the end of the first parak of Kiddushin, long parak over there, 40 blot. So on Chaf Tes, so the Mishnah over there gives us the basic rules of the mitzvahs that are obligated both by men and women, and mitzvahs that are only obligated by men and not by women. And I would venture, I guess, that we all know the basic difference. Here we have the Mishnah. Called mitzvahs essay, any positive commandment, shazman grama, that's time-bound, anashim chayavim, anashim peturus. Men are obligated, women are going to be exempt. Now, if it is a positive mitzvah that's not time-bound, both men and women are going to be obligated. That is the Mishnah in Kiddushin, and now we can apply Rav Yochanan's rule. So we have a general rule, but that's just it. It's a general rule, and it doesn't cover every single case. So klalahu, you think that this is always true? Women are exempt from every time-bound mitzvah. Hooray! Matzah, simcha, v'hakel. The mitzvah says, "Shazman gramahu v'nashim chayavos." So the Gemara says, "I will give you three examples of positive commandments, time bound, and women are obligated. The mitzvah of matzah, ichilas matzah, on lel haseder, women are obligated to do so. Simcha, to have a level, a degree of simcha on yontiv. So that is a mitzvah for both men and women. And obviously, because it's on yontiv, specific to yontiv, it is time bound. And finally, hakel." So on the sukkahs of the Shemitah year, where everyone is going to gather in order to hear the melech being reading from Sefer Devarim, so that also is time-bound, and yet on these three mitzvahs, women are obligated. Now, why they're obligated? So we have drushes for all three of them. The point is that it doesn't conform to the basic rule of the Mishnah. These are time-bound mitzvahs, and women are obligated, and so therefore you see that the Mishnah is giving us a general rule, but it doesn't cover every single case. Now the Gemara says, now we'll go in the other direction as well. The Mishnah says that any mitzvah that's not time-bound, so women are going to be exempt. And the Gemara says, and that's not always true as well. Because Any mitzvah says that is not time-bound, women are going to be obligated, except hare, tamu Torah, period, v'rivio, pijan, aben. The mitzvah says, shlo azman grama, v'nashim peturos. So, the mitzvah of learning Torah, which is yomam v'layla, day and night, it's not time-bound. Period, v'rivio, also, is not calendarically based. The mitzvah to procreate, and pijan, aben. The mitzvah to redeem one's firstborn. So, these are non-time-bound mitzvahs. Yes, it's true. The mitzvah of pijan, aben cannot be done within the first month after the baby is born, but that does not mean it's time-bound because it's not calendarically based. It just simply means that the mitzvah does not kick in until the infant is has turned a month old. So in these circumstances, they are not time-bound, and yet women are going to be exempt. So, Elam Rav Yochanan ein lamedim in a klal v'afilu b'makom she'nemar b'chutz. Okay, so this is exactly what Rav Yochanan has taught us, that any time that you have a klal in the Mishnah, don't assume that it's going to apply to every single case. There are going to be exceptions. And even, now we're going to get to the next point, which is that even when the Mishnah says, or the word chutz, meaning these are the exceptions, that doesn't mean that these are the only exceptions. Amar Rabbi Bitemer Rabbi Yirmiya Afanami Tanina. He says, I'll give you another example of the of this principle of Rav Yochanan, based on a Mishnah in Zavim. Od Klal, Acher Amru, there was another general rule, and that is, Kol Shenisa Agabe Hazav Tame. Anything that is carried by the Zav is Tame. The Zav, a man who has a certain type of discharge, and when we talk about a Zav over here, incorporated in this category of Zav is Zav, Zava Nida Yoledes. So if they carry something on top of them, so the item that they carry is going to be Tame. Now over here, it's just it's Xeris HaKosov, it's based on Drushas. The idea is that not something that the Zav is sitting on, not something that the Zav is lying down on, that's Mishka V'Moshe, which we're going to talk about momentarily, but we're talking about something that is actually being carried by the Zav itself. This and other places in the Gemara is referred to as El Yono Shel Zav. So that which is carried by the Zav itself is going to become Tame, not an Avatoma, that's by Mishka V'Moshe, but rather what is being carried by the Zav, the El Yono Shel Zav, is going to go down a level. It will be a Rishon L'Tuma. On the other hand, v'chol shehazav nisa alav. Now, if the zav were on top of something, so that means to say that something is holding the weight of the zav, it's underneath the zav, so tahor. So it is not going to be chum, it's not going to have any tuma. Chutz min aroi lemishka v'moshav v'ha adam. With, the Mishnah says, three notable exceptions. One, mishkav. Two, moshav. Three, adam. So if I have, let's go one by one. If I have mishkav, I have a bed, and the Zav now is on top of the bed. Obviously, the bed is holding and supporting the weight of the Zav. So the bed now is going to be an Avatuma. That is classic Mishkav Zav, Tumas Medrash. Or Moshav, or let's say I have a chair, and the Zav were to sit down on the chair. The chair also now is going to be an Avatuma. And the third example is going to be Adam, meaning to say that if an Adam is actually carrying a Zav, holding him on his shoulders, whatever the case is, holding him in a carriage, if he's carrying the weight of the Zav, even though he's not making physical contact with the Zav, so the Adam is going to be Tameh. Now, it happens to be that in that case over there, this is now what's called Tumas Masa. This is classic carrying. And under those circumstances, the person is going to be Tameh. So these are the three notable exceptions. So the rule is by a Zav, is that anything on top of the Zav, meaning anything that the Zav himself is carrying or herself, so then the halach is that item is going to be a Rishon L'Tuma. Anything underneath the Zav, where the Zav is standing on it, is not going to be Tameh, with the exceptions of Mishkav, Moshav, and Adam. That's the Mishnah of the Suleika. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Now, even though the Mishnah is giving us a general rule, but as we just pointed out, there's got to be other things. The Ha'ika Merkav. So the Gemara says, what about the Merkav? Now, in the Torah, when describing the Tumas Medrash, the Torah gives us three terms. It gives us Mishkav, it gives us Moshav, and it also gives us Merkav as well. How come Merkav is not mentioned in the Mishnah in Zavin? So, Hai Merkav Hechidam, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, Idi Yasav Aleha, if we are talking about the kind of saddle in which the Zav is sitting on it, Haina Moshav, that's the same thing as Moshav. So, it's already included in the Mishnah under the term Moshav. So, Anan Hachi Kamrin, so the Gemara says, no, for purposes of clarification, this is what we meant. Ha'ika gaba de uchva, there is basically the top of the saddle. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa, Ukav Tameh Moshav Vehatfos Tameh Merkav. Then when you're talking about the saddle itself, which the Zav is sitting on, so you could file that under the category of Moshav, but when you're talking about the Tfos, that's the front of the saddle where the Zav is holding that item. So he's not sitting on that part of the saddle, but rather he's holding that part of the saddle. So that falls under the category of Merkav. So we see over here that there is also something else that is going to be an avatoma, and that is the Merkav, like we just described over here in this Tosefta. Elosh mamina in lemedim in aklalos ve'afilo b'makom she'nemar bo chutz. Okay, so we just simply have another example where even though this Mishnah in Zavim gave us a general rule, but nevertheless, it's not all inclusive, and there are going to be other things as well. Amar Ravina b'Tamar Rav Nachman Afanami Tanina, and he says, and I'm going to give another example as well. Notably, our Mishnah here in Erevin, the first Mishnah of the third parak of Erevin. Bichol ma'arvim and mishafim chutz menamayim v'amelech. That you can make an Erev and you can make sheet of mevos with everything except for water and salt. V'sulek, now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, is that it? V'ayika kameim u'pitrios. Now, isn't there also mushrooms? Elash ma'amina in lamena mena klaus v'afilo b'makum shenamah b'chutz. And to which we see over here that even though our Mishnah is using the klal of you could use any food, and the Mishnah on top of that says, and here are the notable exceptions, so that doesn't mean that these are the only exceptions. It just simply means here's a selection of exceptions, but there could be other exceptions as well. Notably over here, specific to the halacha of making an Erev Tchomim, so what else can you not use? You cannot use mushrooms as well. So this is just simply another example where, even though we have a rule of the Mishnah, and even though the Mishnah says except, that doesn't mean that these are the only exceptions, and that doesn't mean that the rule is therefore, by definition, going to incorporate everything else. Okay. What the Gemara does not explain, interestingly enough, is we've just learned together that one cannot make an Erev Tchum with mushrooms. Now, what exactly is the problem with mushrooms? Why are mushrooms going to be the exception, another exception to the rule? And why do mushrooms fall under the category of water and salt and that you can't make an Erev Tchum? Certainly interesting in that the Gemara does not give any explanation why not. Now, mushrooms obviously are food and obviously they're edible, and the Gemara in Brachos talks about the bracha that one's going to be making over mushrooms, so it is a little bit difficult to understand. Tosfos on the very bottom of the Amud, as you go to the top of the next Amud, so Tosfos writes that they, as far as mushrooms are concerned, Avaldavar she'ein tzarich tikkun, Tosfos' first narrow line, Avaldavar she'ein tzarich tikkun im nikach bekesem meister kol shekin dema'arvan bo. Tosfos says that as far as the mushrooms are concerned, I read a little bit ahead. So the but Tosfos seems to indicate that mushrooms cannot be eaten in its raw state, and it requires tikkun, and that's why it is no good. All right, that's that seemingly is what's behind it. But again, the Gemara itself does not give any indication as to why not. And on top of that, also there's a gaon in terms of when the mushrooms are excluded in the Mishnah. Is it excluded from Erevin, or is excluded from Meister Sheni, and the ability to purchase Meister Sheni. It happens to be the opinion of the Gaon is that the mushrooms are only excluded from Meister Sheni and not from Eruv Tchumim. Okay, and you could see the Gaon right over here make the point very succinctly, and in Shulchan Aruch it's discussed in more detail. Anyway, but let's continue in the Gemara. Hakol Nikach Bekesem Meister. Okay, so everything can be purchased with Kesem Meiser. And the Gemara now is going to be discussing the remainder of today's daf. Is going to be discussing the foods that can be purchased with Kesem Meiser. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Chad Masni Ha'erev, Chad Masni Ha'Meiser. So we're going to have two opinions amongst the Amorayim on a statement that we're going to see in just a moment. One applies it to Erev, the other applies it to Meiser. Chad Masni Ha'erev, and now one is going to apply to Erev, and what is the statement? So the Gemara is going to tell us. Lo shanu ela mayim bifnei atzmo umelch bifnei atzmo. Even though our Mishnah says that water by itself and salt by itself is not going to qualify to ein ma'arvin, and you can't make an erev with each one of them separately, aval bimayim umelch ma'arvin. But if I take the salt and I take the water and I put them together, and basically what I have is some form of a brine, so then you can make an erev tchum with the combination of salt and water. Now, v'chad masni am meiser. Now, another also has the statement, but not talking about eruv etchumim, but rather talking about meiser sheni. And lo shanu ala mayim bifnei atzmo melech bifnei atzmo. That is only, in other words, what can you not buy with your meiser sheni money? You can't buy water by itself or salt by itself. However, the eini kachin ava mayim melech nikachin bekesef meiser, with the salt and the water combined together, so that you can purchase with kesef meiser. So we have a statement that says that the Mishnah's halacha only applies by water by itself or salt by itself, but once I combine the two, so then I can. It's just a question of which version we're going to go with. Either I can use it for Erev Tchum, or I can use it for Meister Sheni. So manda masni amaiser kol shekena erev. Now, if you're learning it on amaiser, so for sure it's going to work on erev. Manda masni erev. But if I'm learning it only on erev, aval amaiser lo. But it, not necessarily amaiser. Meaning that this idea that there is a certain amount of flexibility. So if the flexibility exists by eruv itchomim, so that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to apply by Maaser Sheni. And the Gemara goes and explains why. My time a para beinan. So the Gemara says because as we're it's going to become clear and clear over the entire sugya that when it comes to Maaser Sheni, it has to be a pre. Now pre over here I know means fruit, but doesn't necessarily mean fruit, as we're going to be discussing at the end of the daf. Probably we'll get to it tomorrow. But the idea over here is that when it comes to Maaser Sheni, it has to be something substantial. So if I say that water and salt mixed together qualifies for Eruv Tchomim, but okay, fine, that's Eruv Tchom. But when it comes to Maaser Sheni and the ability to purchase with your Maaser Sheni money some produce in Yerushalayim or some food in Yerushalayim, it has to be something substantial. Okay, and again, this point is going to be made even clearer as we go through the sugya. He also, Rav Yitzchak Masni HaMaaser. So Rav Yitzchak comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he learns it regarding Maaser Sheni, meaning that if I take salt and I take water and I combine the two together, so then I can use my Maaser Sheni money and buy salt water with that Maaser Sheni money. So Meisve, so he was challenged based on the following brisa. Heid Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, Lifnei Rabbi Eliezer, Shel Beis Abba, Hayulo Chinsir Bekes of Maaser. So he testifies over the following. In my father's house, so what they would do is that they would use their Kes of Maaser money, and they would purchase with it the brine, specifically fish brine. And that means to say that basically the juice, the fats that come out of the fish. So Amar lo Shem lo shamata ela kishe kirve dogim muraven behen. And the response was, perhaps you don't have the story exactly accurate. Maybe the only time that the fish brine was purchased is only if there were actually some of the fish in the mixture. So in other words, it was some sort of schmaltz, but it wasn't just the fat itself. It was also pieces of the fish, intestines, innards of the fish that was in it as well. Maybe then and only then it would be acceptable. They would use the Maaser Sheni money to purchase it, but not for the schmaltz in of itself. Fine. So you see the back and forth over here. Now the more lenient position, and the Gemara now makes exactly this point, Vafila Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, even though he took the more lenient position, lo kamar ela bitzir. But he was still talking about where it was the schmaltz of the fish, the shumna, the perahi. At least it was the actual fat of the fish. But if you have salt water, so that's nothing. That has no kind of nourishing value whatsoever. It's not connected to any kind of pre. And so the Gemara says, I can't possibly understand what the argument would be that just because I took the salt and the water and put them together, so now I could take my kesef money and use it to purchase the salt water. So Amar Rav Yosef lo nitzricha ela shenasan l'socho shemen. So Rav Yosef says, fine. So maybe what we're discussing over here is I have salt water and I'm taking my kesef meiser money and I'm using it to buy the salt water. And as we just pointed out, that's a very difficult argument. Maybe what we're discussing over here is where there was a little bit of olive oil put into the salt water. So Amrali Abai v'tepikle mishum shemen. So Abai says, okay, so now what you purchased is the oil. So the Gemara says, L'tzricha shenasan d'meimayim u'melach b'havla'a. So he says, okay, well, what we're going to argue now is that, yes, the money that was used was purchasing the oil. On the other hand, however, the salt water obviously costs something. It's salt and it's water. And what we're going to say is that the cost of the salt and the water was nivlal. It was included in the purchasing of the oil, otherwise known as the principle of havla. The idea of havla is basically the idea of absorption, in that when you're making a purchase and the purchase is going on a number of items, we could say that the purchase price is really principally for the quote-unquote main item, and everything else that comes along with it is basically coming along for the ride. That means to say over here, let's just focus on this particular case. So over here, I have a mixture of olive oil and salt and water, and now I want to take my kes of Maaser money, and I want to use it to purchase. Now, the halach is that I have to purchase a pri, something which is a fruit, a produce. And so the only thing that really I could purchase with it is the olive oil. So what I can now make the argument is that really the truth of the matter is that the money is going to be tendered for the olive oil, and the fact that the water and the salt are coming in along, so they're coming in just simply behavlah, they're going to be absorbed in that in the cost. But the truth of the matter is that the money is really fundamentally going to be for the olive oil. Even though there is also an understanding that obviously you're going to be paying just a little bit more because you are getting the water and you are getting the salt, but in terms of how to view the transaction, the money is principally going to be for the olive oil. The Gemara wants to know, is this going to be okay? And then for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to be discussing the topic of Havla'a, and that'll really take us through the remainder of the daf. In the meantime, however, what has come out over here is that vis-a-vis Maaser Sheni, so the Gemara now therefore has concluded that for Maaser Sheni, even if I take the water and I take the salt and I put them together, so you can't use that for Maaser Sheni, and the only circumstance of which be okay is that only if olive oil were introduced into the mixture. And so it only leaves us off with the basic question, which is that water and salt added together, salt water, would that be good for Eruv Itchumim? So that is left undetermined, meaning indeterminate, meaning that there are two ways to learn the Mishnah, and we only concluded regarding Maaser Sheni. That doesn't necessarily mean we concluded regarding Eruv Itchumim. Okay, I've got. Let's take us now to the remainder of today's daf, and that we're going to be discussing the topic of Havla'a. The one Gemara wants to know, is this a halachic mechanism in which one can employ? And the Gemara is going to answer, is going to be very simply, yes, but it's going to take a while for the Gemara to go through the sources of these halachas. The Gemara says, Uva Havla Mishari is Havla Mutar. And the Gemara says, yes, Va'atanya Ben Bagba Gomer. So over here, we're going to be looking at Pesukim and Parshas Re'eh as it relates to taking Maaser Sheni money. Maaser Sheni money, that means to say money that you redeemed the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni. You took that money and brought it to Yerushalayim, and now you're going to purchase, and what are you going to purchase? So the Torah mentions four items. Babakar, Malam Shalochim Bakar, Agav Oram. So you can purchase meat. And not only is it halacha that you can purchase meat, but even though you're purchasing a side of meat, and it's going to be hide over there as well, meaning including the purchase, is going to be hide. And if without the principle of Havla'a, here's one could have easily argued, that since the money has to be tendered for food that you're going to eat, so as far as the pigeon is concerned, as far as the redemption is concerned, so for sure the money that was used to purchase the food now is going to be in the food, but there's also going to be money that was tendered against the hide. And the hide is not something which is edible. And you could have made the argument that what you now have to do with the hide is that then you have to turn around and sell the hide in order to buy food with the hide. All this could have been argued. And what we're learning together now is this idea of Havla, which is no, you don't have to resell the hide, meaning that the way we could view the transaction is that principally the money is tendered against the meat of the animal, and the hide is just simply coming along bihavla'a. And the Gemara is going to give numerous other examples of this uvitzon. And that's the next thing mentioned in the pasuk. And the Gemara understands over here, malamit shalokhin son agav gizason. That means to say that when you're buying sheep with your Maaser Sheni money, and so over here, not only are you going to be getting sheep, but you're also going to be getting the hide of the sheep as well, and you're getting the shearing as well. So that is all coming bihavla'a. And on top of that also, when you're buying a bottle of wine, so that means to say now that you're also getting a bottle, and you want to tell me now that the bottle is going to be free and clear of any kedushas Maaser Sheni, meaning what? Again, same argument. Can we say that some of the money is going to be tendered against the bottle, and that means to say that the bottle is not a food? The bottle then has to be turned around and sold for food. And again, it's the same exact point. No, the bottle doesn't have to be turned around and sold for food, and that means to say that the bottle is just simply coming along bihavla. Uvishechem alamit shalochin temed mishehichmitz. And as far as shecher is concerned, we're going to be learning another point, and that is basically we're looking at a drink that is going to be flavored by the grape. And as far as a grape flavoring is concerned, so the grape flavoring is only, the actual grape content is only a fraction of the entire drink. And yet, the halach is that when I buy temed, when I buy this flavored water, so grape flavored water, so the halach is that it is considered that that all of the Maaser Sheni money was tendered against the grape. So I'm Rav Yochanan, Manda Matagin Liba Bakar. Okay, Adkan, sorry, period. And so we have now four different examples by the four different cases that are given the Torah that we have Havla in all of these scenarios. Now, Why do we need four of them? So as the Gemara is about to elaborate, because each one builds a chiddush one on top of the other. What Rav Yochanan is going to be bothered by is that as we go through the Gemara and the progression of the chiddushim here in this in the Torah, so Rav Yochanan says what will come out after all said and done is that the one example of Bakar, actually the first example, is going to be unnecessary. There's not really going to be a chiddush coming out from Bakar. And Rav Yochanan's basically left off with an open-ended question, why is Bakar in the Torah where it doesn't really represent a chiddush? And it just simply takes the Gemara some time to make this point, but that's basically going to be the point of the upcoming Gemara. Amar Rav Yochanan, manda matargan li b'Bakar, ali b'ben Bagbag. So based on the drasha that we just learned together in the name of Ben Bagbag, Rav Yochanan says to me, if somebody can explain to me why Bakar is there, meaning what's the chiddush we're learning from Bakar, Movila Mane Abasrela Bay Masusa. So what I'll do is I'll carry their clothing to the launderer. Meaning I'll be mishamish, meaning that person who can explain it to me is going to be clearly a tremendous Talmid Chacham, perhaps on a level higher than me, or at least I'll learn a halacha from that person, and so therefore I will serve that person. I'll be mishamish that person if that person can explain it to me. So my time, kulu tzrichi lavar mi babakar. So now the Gemara is going to take us through the sequence as understood by Rav Yochanan. Every point is necessary, with exception to the word bakar. Delo tzarech, it's not necessary. So, Maitri Chadikas Rachmana Babakar, because now we're going to go step by step. If the Torah only said Bakar, Hava Amina Bakar Hudim is Davin Agav Oro, so then I could say that the hide is going to come along with the rest of the animal, Mishum Degufehu, because quite frankly, they're connected, they're attached. Now, obviously, you could separate the two, but physically, they're attached. And so, therefore, one can make the argument that, yeah, I'm going to sell you the animal and the hide will come along for the ride. So, Avatsona Gav Gizaso Delav Gufehu Emalo. But when it comes to the sheep and the shearings, so one can make the argument that the shearings are, although physically attached, but not really part and parcel of the sheep. Anyway, they were planned to be sheared. So maybe you can make the argument that it's not as much an attachment, and therefore the sale of the sheep doesn't necessarily have the shearings coming along with the sale. Now, if the Torah would have given me the example of the sheep, so there the argument would have been, okay, but at least the shearings are currently attached to the sheep. But when it comes to wine in the bottle, so there is no physical attachment between the wine and the bottle. So I would have thought that when I'm purchasing wine in the bottle, the transaction is only for the wine, not for the bottle. So the ikas of Rachman. Now, if the Torah would have said yain hava amina mishum dahainu nitirasa, yeah, the Gemara says fine, but how can you have wine without a bottle? The bottle obviously is there to secure and to protect the wine. So obviously, then when you're buying a bottle of wine, there's no other way to hold the wine without the bottle. So fine, so there I can make the argument that I need the bottle with the wine, and so therefore the bottle is incorporated in the sale. But when it comes to this temen, when it comes to the flavored drink, so it's just kiyua ba'ama. All it is just simply the essence of the fruit going in. But that's all it is. So I might have thought that you can't really view the sale going on the actual fruit itself. So Kasa Rachmana Shechar, that's why the Torah says the word Shechar. And so basically what we've done now is we explained how every step going forward, Bakar, Sown, Yain, Shechar, so each one of them represents a chiddush one bigger than the next. And so therefore what we've done now is Bakar is the smallest chiddush and Shechar is the largest chiddush. So right now Bakar for sure is not needed. But now let's go in the other direction. Meaning, so the truth of the matter is that once we learn that one chiddush is bigger than the next, so why not just mention Shechar? So what the Gemara now is going to do is work in the other direction, because even with the word Shechar, I'm still going to need Yain, I'm still going to need Son, and as the Gemara is going to struggle to try to explain, and I'm still going to need Bakar. So now we're going to go in the other direction. V'ikas v'rachmana b'Shechar, if the Torah would have written Shechar, hava amina my Shechar, devela ki'ilos. So I would have thought that Shechar is a reference to fig, even though fig obviously is not wine, but it's something which is intoxicating, and it's a fruit. Maybe that's what Shechar meant. But if we're talking about yain, which is wine, with the bottle, so I might have thought that the sale only includes the wine and not the bottle. Or the Kedusha is only going to go into the wine, not necessarily the bottle. And once again, the Havamina would have been that, had the Torah not said the word Yain, that the bottle itself is not going to be nivlal in the sale, and the bottle itself now is going to have to be resold for food. The ikas rachmani yain agav kankano dahanan intirasa vatson agav gizasa emalo. Now, when it comes to wine in a bottle, so again, how else are you going to be able to hold the wine without the bottle? The bottle becomes essential to just simply holding the wine. And so therefore, in the sale, so the bottle comes together with the wine, and fine, it's nichlal, there's havla. But when it comes to the sheep, you don't need the shearings. The shearings are not necessary in order to preserve the meat of the sheep. So therefore, kasarach menat son, that's why the Torah has to write son, da'afilo agav gizasa. So that is that means to say that when I'm making a purchase of the sheep, of the meat of the sheep, and even though it's the side of the sheep, and even though there's hide over there and there's shearing over there, nevertheless, that's also going to be purchased behavla. So now, bebakar lamali. So now, at this point in time, we're that's it. Meaning, we've gone backwards, we've gone in the other direction, and now we understand that sheikhar is a chiddush, yain is a chiddush, shon is a chiddush, but that's it. I don't need anything more. V'chitim, and the Gemara says, now I know what you're going to suggest. Ilokas rachman babakar. If the Torah not written the word babakar, have I mean I might have thought son agav ora in agav gizasa lo. So if it would have said son would be good. Meaning what could be included in the sale of son? So maybe the hide, but not necessarily the shearings. And therefore, kasav rachman babakar lasuya oro. And that's why the Torah writes the word bakar, because bakar gets me to the hide, and then he oscillates son, and that leaves me not son liasuya gizasa. Where so now is coming to tell me that it's not only the hide, but it's even the shearings as well. So ilokas rachman abakar lo havamina son agav or in agav gizasalo. So the Gemara says no. I'll make the following argument, and that is even if the Torah did not write the word bakar, I still would not have necessarily thought that. Why? The imkin lechav rachman abakar. Because if this is really what the Torah wanted to drive at, the Torah could have just written bakar by itself. The mimela iasulate sown. And that means to say that then it would have left over its own inevitably. They came in the kasa of Rahmana sown, and by virtue of the fact that the Torah wrote sown, wrote sheep, tafilo agav gizasar, that means to say that not only are you going to be able to, not only are you going to be getting the sheep, but you're going to be getting the hide and the shearings as well, so babakar lamali. So now it comes out that the word bakar is perfectly superfluous. And hash tetzon agav gizasim is davna bakar agav ora mibaye, meaning sheep, what would be the purpose of the Torah giving sheep as an example? Because you're going to get the shearings. So if you're getting the shearings, clearly you're getting the hide that's in between the meat and the shearings. So by bakar, so if you purchase the meat of the bakar, for sure you're going to get the hide of the bakar as well. So at this point in time, bakar becomes perfectly superfluous, and hainu dekamer Rav Yochanan, and now we can make full circle, and now we go back to what Rav Yochanan says, man de matagin liba bakar, liba de ben bagbag, mavlina man lebe masusa. So then I'm going to go in and bring over their laundry to the launder. I'm sorry, I'm going to bring over the clothing to the launder. Meaning, I'll be mishamish that person who can explain it to me, because Rav Yochanan says, quite frankly, I don't understand. Now we'll stop over here. We'll leave ourselves off for tomorrow. We're going to go through the pasuk inside tomorrow. We're going to go through the drasha, drasha's chazal, the klal uprado klal, or the ribui mi or ribui, in terms of how we know what's included in what you can buy with your maaser sheni money. Okay, that's where we're going to start tomorrow. In the meantime, let's review. We started the third parak of Erevin, in which we went over the basic halachas of Erev Tchum, and that if a person wants to move his makom shvisa to a new location, so what he can do is he can put food there before Shabbos and allow the food in that place to be kona makom shvisa, an acquisition of his new point of center. What food can you use? The Mishnah says you could use whatever foods you want, just simply not water, not salt. And then the Mishnah says, and also same halacha regarding the purchasing of your produce in Yerushalayim with your Maaser Sheni money. You have Maaser Sheni money that you brought to Yerushalayim, and you want to now buy produce in Yerushalayim with that money. You could buy whatever food you want, with exception to water and salt. And then the Mishnah went over a number of other halachas regarding a Nazir using yain for his Erev Tchum, and a Yisrael using truma for his Erev Tchum, and the ability for a Kohen to take his Erev Tchum and put it either in a basic pras or possibly in the basic pras itself. Those halachas which we're going to be spending more time in upcoming Dapin. In the meantime, however, there were in the Gemara three basic discussions that we had. One is the statement of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says that every time we have a rule in the Mishnah, a klal, so ein lemeidim min haklalos. That means to say that the general rule is good as a general rule, but it's not going to be covering every single example. And just because the Mishnah gives us a general rule does not mean that it covers every single example. And furthermore, even when the Mishnah says except, that doesn't mean that the Mishnah is going to go through every exception. There could be other exceptions as well. The Gemara applied this rule of Rav Yochanan. First of all, where did he principally say it? On the Mishnah in Kedushin, in terms of what mitzvahs men are obligated in, which mitzvahs men and women are obligated in. And so that's where he principally made the statement. Where else do we find the statement to have application? We learned it together in the Mishnah in Zavim, regarding that which a Zav is metame, Elyono Shel Zav, Tachtono Shel Zav, and also regarding our Mishnah right over here, where what foods can be used in order to make Erev Tchum, what foods can be purchased with your Meister Sheni money. So the so that is another application of this rule of Rav Yochanan. That was topic number one. Topic number two is the possibility that although salt is not considered significant, water is not considered significant as it relates to Erev Tchum and as it relates to Meister Sheni, if I take water and salt and put them together, so then they do gain significance. Some learn that regarding Meister Sheni. Some learn that regarding regarding Tchum. If you learn it regarding Meister Sheni, for sure it would apply to Tchum. But if you learn it regarding Tchum, it wouldn't necessarily apply to Meister Sheni. Why? Because by Meister Sheni, it has to be something which is like a pre. It has to be something significant. And so salt water may just simply not be significant enough. Rav Yitzchak comes in and he cites a brisa. And in the brisa, the only thing they were discussing was fish brine, the schmaltz of a fish, but certainly salt water would not be would be insufficient. And so how could you even possibly suggest the salt water by itself would be good in terms of the Meister Sheni? To which the Gemara's response to that is, maybe the case under discussion of the salt water is when there's olive oil in the salt water. You're taking Meister Sheni money and you're purchasing a mixture of salt water and olive oil. The Gemara says, what's the chiddush? The chiddush is havla'ah. Is that the way we could view the transaction is that the money is really going to be tendered against the olive oil and the salt and the water just coming along for the as part of the transaction, but the, really we could view the transaction as principally going on the olive oil. This idea of Avla'ah, Ben Bagbag, learns it based on the Psukim in Parshas Rei, or I should say, based on the Pasuk in Parshas Rei. And the third topic of discussion in our daf is going to be the principle of Havla'ah. This idea that we can look at a transaction where the transaction is going to apply specifically to one part of the transaction and other things are just coming in almost like as a bonus, so to say. And we went through the drush of Ben Bagbag and the difficulty Rav Yochanan had with the drusha because there were four separate points in the drusha, four different examples given in the Torah, Bakar Tzon, Yain Shechar, and Rav Yochanan says the truth of the matter is that even though we have learned there are chidushin going in each direction, in the direction of Bakar Tzon, Yain Shechar, in the direction of Shechar, Yain, Tzon, Bakar, but nevertheless, when all is said and done, and after analysis, it seems that Bakar seems to be perfectly superfluous, and there does not necessarily seem to be a chiddush learned out from Bakar. And Rav Yochanan challenges and says, if anyone can explain to me the chiddush in Bakar, so then for sure, I will be Mishamish, that individual.